welcome back or welcome to the Sex Scandal and Shenanigans podcast. My name is Adrienne and I'll be your host. In this show, I discuss history's most notorious lovers and mistresses. Today's episode will be featuring or focusing on the relationships of none other than Lucius Domitius Ahenobarbus. Oh, there's a name for you. While that name might not be the famous moniker of this Roman emperor, you will learn of his more well-known name later on. As per every episode, let's dive into our definitions per Cambridge Dictionary and my contextual definition of a mistress. Per Cambridge Dictionary, a mistress is a woman who has a sexual relationship with a married man or a sexual relationship over a long period of time with a man who is not her husband. Here's my contextual definition. A woman who sleeps with a man regardless of his marital status. Moving on. Before moving on to the stories and debauched tales of Lucius, I need to give a disclaimer. This episode will be discussing sex, sexual assault, spousal abuse, incest allegations, and suicide. If any of these topics are triggering for you, you may wish to skip this episode. Listener discretion is advised. As usual, let's discuss our horde of characters in this story. Our characters include Lucius Domitius Ahenobarbus, Gnaeus Domitius Ahenobarbus, Caligula, Agrippina the Younger, Augustus, Claudius Britannicus, Claudia Octavia, Poppaea Sabina, Statilia Messalina, Sporus, Claudia Acti, Pythagoras, no, not the mathematician, Seneca, Tacitus, Cassius Dio, Josephus, and of course, Suetonius, our old friend. Before diving into Lucius's life, we do need to speak about Mommy Agrippina the Younger. She was immensely influential, not just for her son, but also for herself. If not for her, Lucius would never become the Emperor of Rome. Relationship number one. Agrippina the Younger. She was born on the 6th of November, AD 15, to Agrippina the Elder, daughter of Julia the Elder, who was a daughter of Augustus, and Germanicus Julius Caesar, or Caesar, stepson of Augustus and son of Livia Drusilla during her first marriage. She was born in modern-day Cologne, Germany. Her first husband was Roman politician Gnaeus Domitius Ahenobarbus. He was significantly older than her, and the record of their relationship is scant. He died when his only son, Lucius, was about 3 years old in 40 AD. At this marriage, Agrippina was 13 and Ahenobarbus was about 30. Sources are undefined, but it is assumed that he was born around 2 BC. Agrippina has been described as ruthless, ambitious, politically motivated, and a woman of a domineering presence. She is not only a natural member, born and not married into the imperial family, but she also remarried into it and birthed a rather despicable son to be the last of the Julio-Claudian dynasty. 41 AD, Agrippina was wed to husband number two, Gaius Sallustius. Gaius Sallustius Passienaeus Crispus. He was a Roman consul twice over and became a stepfather to Lucius. Remember when I mentioned how ambitious and devious Agrippina could be when it suited her needs? Well, she struck gold on husband number two. Rise as a proconsul and governor of Asia, his wealth and political prestige rose. Due to this, Agrippina manipulated Passienaeus Crispus to grant his estate and make her his heir. In AD 47, Agrippina then murdered her husband, more than likely via poisoning. Yikes. Agrippina's most notorious marriage, however, was with Claudius, the current emperor. As we've gone through the family wreath of the Julio-Claudian line, I think we need to revisit it again. As she was the daughter of Agrippina the Elder and Germanicus, her paternal uncle, the brother of her father, was Claudius. He and Germanicus, again, were full brothers. She married her paternal uncle. That's some imperial hillbilly shit right there. You can imagine the thought process. If I want power, I need to get close. Like, marrying close. Imagine if she did something like this with her son, to gain and maintain imperial power. Oh, wait. It is alluded, but not necessarily confirmed, that she may have inveigled her way into her son's bed to maintain access to imperial power. Wait. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm going to talk about the marriage of Agrippina and Claudius first. We've spoken about Claudius briefly, but here's a talk later didn't read. Born in Gaul, or modern-day France, in 10 BC, his parents were Nero Claudius Drusus and Antonia the Younger, daughter of Mark Antony and Octavia Minor, sister of Augustus. Again, family wreath. Beating a dead horse here. Claudius was married three times before shacking up with his niece, becoming heir to the imperial Rome after his nephew Caligula died in AD 41. He had multiple natural children, but the two most important ones were Britannicus and Claudia Octavia. In AD 49, Agrippina and Claudius married, and the Roman people were not pleased about this, especially since it was an uncle-niece marriage. Ew, so gross. As to whether it was consummated or not, I'd like to remain ignorant. Thank you very much. Prior to their marriage, Claudius ended the exile of Agrippina, and other family members were given per a coup that was undertaken by trying to usurp the throne from Caligula with her brother-in-law Marcus Aemilius Lepidus in AD 39. So, essentially, Claudius brought them back. This was a mistake in the long run. Anyway, there are now two imperial heirs, Lucius, who will have a name change, and Britannicus. In AD 50, there is pressure on Tiberius to adopt Lucius as his heir. Lucius's name changed from Lucius Domitius Ahenobarbus to Nero Claudius Caesar Drusus Germanicus, known as Nero in history. Yes, that Nero. No, not the Nero sandwich shop that's all over London. I hope it wasn't named after him. But anyway, yes, that Nero, the one who watched Rome burn while he's playing his lyre. Also, in order to marry Agrippina, Claudius had to change the laws governing marriages before marrying his own niece. In AD 54, Claudius finally died. His death is attributed to Agrippina via poisoning. Something to do with poisonous mushrooms. This type of murder sounds familiar. Sources differ, but here's the rundown because I think it's important. Josephus, the Jewish Roman historian, says that the poisoning is a rumor. Tacitus states that the poison maker in Rome, Locusta, prepared the poison but did not administer it. Halitus, a servant of Claudius. For some reason, I want to call Halitus halitosis. Don't ask me why. Dio relates that the story is similar to what Tacitus reported. He writes that the poison was prepared by Locusta, but the poison was administered by Agrippina and not by Halitus, aka halitosis. After her son's power and become emperor, Agrippina convinced Claudius to remove two of the Praetorian guards and tutors for Britannicus that supported Britannicus, but then, again, like I said, replaced to support her and Nero's ascension to the imperial throne. This becomes important very much later. Now it's later. One of the Praetorian guards that replaced the supporters of Britannicus was Afrianus Burrus, who was close with Nero, which easily paved the way for him to become made emperor after the death of Claudius. Also, another later issue. Locusta, whom Nero favored, was also attributed to the death of Claudius' son Britannicus, who Nero said to have died because of an epilepsy attack. The exact date of his death is unknown, but it can be estimated from December 54 AD to the 11th of February 55 AD. He would have been 14. Rest in pieces. Just as a side note, Locusta was well known in ancient Rome. She was also a well-known poison maker, and Nero favored her and also learned a lot about poison making from her. So much so that she got her own estate and was able to have her students move to one of her estates for further education. How nice. Speaking of tragic relationships, let's discuss Nero's first marriage. In 53 AD, Claudia Octavia and Nero had married. Claudia was adopted into another powerful patrician family to bypass the incestuous sounding marriage. But keep in mind, they were not blood related, you know, they were like distant cousins, or actually not even really that distant. They're like great cousins or something, or cousins once removed. I don't know. I just know that they came from the same family because they're on a family wreath and not a family fucking tree. By the time her brother died, Britannicus, Tacitus writes, Claudia Octavia had learned to hide her griefs, her affections, her every emotion. During their marriage, Nero began a three-year-long affair with his first notable mistress, Claudia Acti. Side note, she'll be referred to as Acti to prevent any confusion for Claudia Octavia or any other Claudia, if I mention it. To put it bluntly, this was a political marriage and it was never a happy or fruitful relationship. He made himself a wife he never wanted. Nero divorced the likable Claudia Octavia, stating that she was sterile and therefore useless to the imperial family. In addition to her sterility as per Nero's claims, he also maimed and degraded her name, or at least tried to, by saying that she was in an adulterous affair with a Greek flute player from Alexandria named Eucharis. I know I said that wrong. I'm not apologizing for that. This smear campaign against Claudia Octavia was instigated by Nero's mistress at the time, Poppaea Sabina. She was also a noblewoman, and she's going to be mentioned later. And by later, I mean now. She was the next wife of Nero. Nero certainly knows how to pick them, huh? Eventually, the former empress is then exiled to Penetaria, now in Venotene, which is within the Neapolitan area. This location also housed previous imperial family members during their exiles, including Julia the Elder, daughter of Augustus. Claudia Octavia died in Penetaria on the 9th of June, 62 AD. She was only 22. We know Nero was less than enthralled with his stepsister as a wife. As yet any young and healthy man, Nero got himself a mistress as advised by Roman statesman, writer, and tutor Seneca the Younger. Or just Seneca. Agrippina did not like the advice that was given to Nero as it would diminish the influence she would have on her son. However, Nero's penis won out. He got himself a mistress. Nero met Acte when he was about 17 years old, so around 54 AD, after at least a year on the imperial throne. Their affair has been reported as being passionate, so much so, that it is alleged that Nero was bribing consuls to create a royal or imperial lineage for Acte, so that he may marry her. Ever the imperious woman that she was, Agrippina was like, nah, bitches, we ain't doing this. I'm a leading family member of the Julio-Claudian line, as is my son, and he is not marrying this freed floozy of a woman. No, not happening. But you know, like in Latin. Oh, I should mention that Acte was from Asia Minor and was brought in as a slave from either Claudius or his daughter, Claudia Octavia. Remember her? She died. Also, it can be presumed that this is how they met. Also, Otho, a future short-term Roman emperor, assisted Nero in getting Acte to and from Nero's rooms, residences, and even some. More so, another friend, Ananias Serenus, protege of Seneca, claimed that Acte was his mistress to deflect suspicious people. You know, like mommy. Acte was a persona non grata to Agrippina. This tracks. Speaking of diabolical behavior, while Nero was reigning, Agrippina also reigned, well, to her son, that is. She utilized the mother of the emperor role. Mother of the emperor role to abuse the privileges in certain actions. She used it to listen, albeit behind a curtain, senate meetings, and to get involvement in lucrative businesses and or ventures. At this point, Agrippina was becoming a bear to Nero and this reign slash administration. So what does dear neurotic Nero do? He starts to limit her power and moves her out of the imperial palace and into another imperial residence. Because, of course, she's the mother and she's an imperial family member. Oh, mommy doesn't like this at all. Per Tacitus, Agrippina tries to utilize sexual advances on her son. However, it should be noted that he's the only one that records this. I didn't see anything from Cassius Dio, Josephus, and or any other contemporary writers. But still, that kind of just goes, ugh. Oh, no. Oh, no, that's gross. This is significantly worse than what she did to Clovis Claudius. That's nasty. To get rid of mommy, Nero then meets with his advisors to find an efficient way to be rid of her, as if she'll never bother him again. How so? Kill her, of course. Initially, Nero wants her stabbed. Quick and efficient, right? Oh, no, we can't do that, because then we'd have a bleeding body to deal with and... You know what? Let's just poison her first. So that's where Tor attempts 1 in 3, poison the woman. Notice how I said attempts? Yeah, apparently Agrippina was ready and prepared for someone trying to kill her. So much so that she's been taking antidotes for years. Attempt number 4, collapsing the bedroom. Nero's next idea was to break her bedroom ceiling to fall and kill her while sleeping. This sounds like a Wile E. Coyote plot with Acme building materials with instructions from IKEA. Somehow, Agrippina survives this attempt. According to Michael Farquhar's book, A Treasury of Royal Scandals, someone in the palace forewarned Agrippina of this attempt on her life. Oh, but the lady's maid died. Oops. Attempt number 5. Back to the concrete drawing board. Since she didn't die from a falling ceiling, the next attempt to kill mommy, dearest, was by rigging a boat to sink. Let's dive in. Agrippina, being the influential imperial woman that she was scheduled for a boat ride. Nero, per Farquhar, happily accompanied mommy to her ship in the docks, kissed her breast, ew, and away she went. And away she came back to shore and survived that murder attempt. Apparently she can swim. This bitch won't die. Back to concrete drawing board again. Nero essentially said, presumably in Latin, fuck it, and had Agrippina stabbed as he initially wanted. Agrippina, ancient Rome's mommy dearest, died via stabbings on the 23rd of March, AD 59, age 43. No one misses her. The next woman to play a significant role in Nero's life, Claudia Acti. Remember I mentioned the name Acti earlier? Now we're going to finally get to her. When Nero was 16 and married to Claudia, he had extramarital affairs. One of his affairs was when he was from age 17 to 20 years old with a freed woman named Claudia Acti. We do know that Acti was from Asia Minor and was acquired by either Claudius when the Roman Empire expanded or by Nero's wife Claudia Octavia. In any case, she and Nero had a relationship. Their relationship was supported by Seneca, a prominent Roman philosopher and statesman, but not supported by Mommy Dearest. Why would Agrippina not want her son to have a mistress? Well, she could influence him in regards to policies that didn't align with Mommy Dearest. If she did influence him, to what extent is unknown. Their affair lasted about 3 years, and it has been described as a passionate one. So much so that, as I described earlier, Nero was wanting to, or rather, he was bribing consuls to create a fake lineage for Acti, and Mommy Dearest put her foot down. At the end of their affair, Acti became wealthy under Nero's reign. She was able to buy villas in the Velletri area in Sardinia. I'm sorry, I can't even read my own handwriting. Unlike his other wives and other lovers, Acti fared much better than the others. She even outlived Nero. She'll be mentioned again later. The woman who made an impact on Nero's heart was Poppaea Sabina. Poppaea Sabina was the mistress and later wife of Nero. She was born in 30 AD and is from Pompeii. Her father was Gaius Poppaea Sabinus, a man of non-patrician background, but achieved his successes through military service. He was a proconsul in Greece and other Roman provinces. He also enjoyed the friendship of Augustus and Tiberius. Marriage to Nero was her third marriage. She was firstly married to Rufius Crispinus. He was of the equestrian rank, below the patricians, highest social rank after the imperial family, but above the plebeians, mostly the regular people. The equestrians usually were wealthy and owned land, but not titled. Similar to the gentry class, if you're comparing it to Regency Britain, aka Jane Austen times. Poppaea did bear Rufius Crispinus a son, Rufius Crispinus. He doesn't fare well in life. Married to Rufius from 44 AD until she decided to divorce him. She then married future short-termed Emperor Otho, or rather, he also was interested in marrying her, but he was only emperor for 3 months, but later, relax. Want more info? Visit the podcast Tertullius Rankium. During this marriage, she met Nero. Nero fell in love with her. They started their extramarital affair. Poppaea, during their relationship, fell pregnant with Nero's child, a daughter named Claudia Augusta. She was Nero's only child. Poppaea and Nero were married in 59 AD, and according to Tacitus, it is here where Nero decides, under the influence of Poppaea, to commit matricide, killing his mother. Please bear in mind that while Poppaea and Nero were sleeping together before they married, he was still married to Claudia Octavia, his stepsister, whom was the victim of the smear campaign by Poppaea. Also bear in mind, Nero's marriage to Poppaea was significant for her because she was then able to become the empress, and she denigrated the name of the previous empress and got rid of Mommy Dearest. So anyway, let's move on. In 58 AD, Nero basically told Otho, who was married to Sabina at the time, to divorce. She and Otho divorced. Less than 2 weeks after his divorce from his stepsister, Octavia Claudia, Nero and Poppaea were married. Also, in 62 AD, Poppaea became pregnant, bearing his only child, Claudia, on the 21st of January, 63 AD, and then she died about 4 months later, either in April or May of 63 AD. Unlike his previous wife, Nero did not kill Poppaea. In 65 AD, she apparently pregnant again, also thinking himself the cultural man that he was. Nero was also spending vast amounts of time at the races because he loved going to the races as well as artistic events. He thought himself an artiste, not an artist, an artiste, Also, because he's emperor, nobody can really refute him. Because of this, Poppaea and Nero were having another marital spat. According to Suetonius, during a rage, Nero kicked Poppaea in the stomach, killing her and their unborn child. He said he didn't kill her, but let me explain, Lucy. He didn't have her murdered like Claudia Octavia or his mother. But inadvertently, yes, he killed Poppaea, but that was never his intent. It should be noted that there are other descriptions and other theories that may be abounding about Nero and Poppaea's marriage and the death of her. Furthermore, other accounts from other contemporary sources, Cassius Dio and Tacitus, believe that Nero did not intentionally mean to harm her. Per Cassius Dio, Nero leapt upon her, but was unsure if intentional or accidental. Tacitus relates that other writers and social commentators during this period have alluded to Nero poisoning her. Modern historians have noted that Tacitus, Suetonius, and Cassius Dio have a heavy bias against Nero and may have recorded less than savory ideas about Nero's behavior towards Poppaea's death. That said, Poppaea may have had a miscarriage complication or died trying to deliver the baby. Either way, she was deeply mourned by Nero, so much so that Nero was embalmed, or that she had been embalmed, and gave divine honors to be bestowed on Poppaea as well as their dead daughter. Her death did not mean the end of Nero's romantic adventures. They seem to have gotten more off the walls. While deeply mourning the death of Poppaea, Nero's next mistress slash wife was Statilia Messalina. There's scant information about Statilia Messalina. We do know that Statilia was Nero's third wife. Here's to hoping third time's a charm. Statilia was married at least three times prior to her marriage to Nero. However, the only two husbands that are known are Marcus Julius Vestinus Atticus and Emperor Nero, and they were only married for like 2 years, from 66 AD to 68 AD. Because Nero was sleeping with Statilia while she was married to Atticus, Nero probably didn't want to be part of a throuple. So guess who had to leave? Atticus. And no, not the one from To Kill a Mockingbird. In 66 AD, Atticus was forced, or my favorite word, voluntold, to commit suicide. How nice of him. How gracious. Nero and Statilia were married from 66 to 68 AD. Not much is recorded of their marriage. We do know that she and Claudia Acti were the only ones to survive Nero's reign after his death. Also, future Emperor Otho requested her hand in marriage, but they never married. I'm just going to come out and say this. Although we know the 1960s were a certain type of lifestyle, so were the 60s AD, okay? Nero was all over the place romantically, to the point where he not only was married to Statilia Messina, but he was also married to Sporus at the same time. The relationships that Nero had with both of them overlap. I'll get into a little bit more detail. Between his marriages of Poppaea and Statilia, Nero expanded his marital relationships with women. In 66 or 67 AD, Nero spotted the young Sporus, a young slave who reminded Nero of his wife Poppaea. So much the reminder of his visage of Poppaea, Nero took Sporus and then castrated him and married him and made Sporus his wife. Suetonius recounts the relationship as an abomination. Of course, Suetonius also noted the relationships and antics of Nero, raping, allegedly, a Vestal virgin, and of course, sleeping with his mother Agrippina the Younger. Cassius Dio recounts in his works that Sporus bore an uncanny resemblance to his deceased wife Poppaea. Before delving into another relationship, very little is known about Sporus prior to their marriage to Nero. In 67 AD, Nero had Sporus castrated and paraded Sporus as his wife in public. But in 67 AD, Nero then marries Statilia, or 66 AD, he marries Statilia. I can't keep up with this man's relationships. Jesus. During their marriage, Nero had Sporus wear female clothes and wore regalia attributed for and to Roman empresses. Sporus's role was that of Nero's wife. Sporus was also addressed as lady, mistress, and empress. In terms of the title mistress, Sporus really didn't embody the definition of the sexualized partner. I will say that in terms of these titles, mistress may be construed as the mistress of the house or the palace, rather than just another sexual partner. Though Claudia Acti does embody mistress as a woman sleeping with a married man, or just a man. In 69 AD, prior to Nero's self-induced demise, aka suicide, during the Calendus festival, basically the first of the month, another reason to celebrate, I guess, Sporus gave Nero a ring with a gemstone recounting the story of the rape of Proserpina, or the rape Persephone, if you prefer the Greek names. Apparently, this was considered a bad omen for Nero's fall from grace and power. Once Nero self-demises himself, or commits suicide, I will go into the adventures of Spores after Nero's death. I think that is quite important to the story of Nero and what happened to Spores, because it's not pretty. And I will do that after we speak about Pythagoras and Nero, which takes place in 64 AD. I know, I'm hopping, skipping, and jumping in between the decade, but whatever. I know I seem to be jumping around time-wise with Nero's relationships, and I am. Topically, I find it important to end with Nero's relationship with a triangular fellow. My goal for today's episode was to discuss his most important to most neurotic or off-the-wall relationships. Starting, of course, with Claudia Octavia, then Acte, Poppaea, Sporus, and Pythagoras, that triangular fellow. Who's not a mathematician. Speaking of Pythagoras, it's time to discuss their relationship with Nero. Their relationship started in 64 AD while he was married to Poppaea, but probably before Sporus. At this point, every time a year is referenced that is in the 60s, I need to take a shot. Nero's romantic entanglements are confusing as all hell. Another marriage Nero was a part of was that with the freedman Pythagoras. Somehow, I sincerely doubt triangles were involved. They married publicly in 64 AD, prior to his marriage to Poppaea. During this time, Roman prefect and imperial bodyguard, Ophonius, I'm going to butcher this name, and at this point I don't care, Tigellinus, T-I-G-E-L-L-I-N-U-S, Tigellinus, described the wedding ceremony between Nero and Pythagoras. He, Nero, stooped to marry himself to one of that filthy herd by name of Pythagoras, with all the forms of regular wedlock. The bridal veil was put over the emperor. People saw the witnesses of the ceremony, the wedding dower, the couch, and the nuptial torches. Everything, in a word, was plainly visible, which even when a woman weds, darkness hides. What I get from that? No one was happy to see Nero be the subservient spouse in this relationship. Remember, in ancient Rome and Greek culture, a man may have a same-sex relationship if he was the more dominant partner. So if this description of Nero's marriage, Nero was the passive partner wearing the veil and having Pythagoras as the husband, unlike the relationship with Sporus, which you would have later on. It is unknown when Pythagoras died. I was reviewing Tacitus, Cassius Dio, and Suetonius, but no mention of Pythagoras' post-relationship with Nero has been found. I wish there was more to explore between Pythagoras and Nero, but I'm having difficulty trying to secure contemporary sources aside from Tacitus, Seneca, Cassius Dio, and Suetonius. However, I saved this relationship for last because it is most skinless out of all of his marriages during his tenure as emperor. Again, Nero played the wife versus the husband. He was the passive partner, which doesn't coincide with Roman ideals, which is where the man is supposed to be the dominant partner. So that ends on a cliff note for that relationship. I know I seem to be jumping around time-wise with Nero's relationships, and I am to a certain extent. Topically, I find it important to end with Nero's relationship with a triangular fellow. My goal for today's episode was to discuss his most important to his most neurotic or off-the-wall relationships, starting, of course, with Claudia Octavia, Acte, Poppaea, Sporus, and, of course, Pythagoras. In 68 AD, Nero was heading to Hades in a handbasket. In May of 68 AD, the Battle of Vesontio commenced. The significance of this was the Praetorian Guard and the Roman legions started favoring their generals rather than remaining loyal to Nero and the imperial throne. Let it not be said here, if the military does not favor you, you will not retain control of your country, empire, and/or province. The Roman military threw its support to Lucius Virginius Rufus, governor of Germania Superior, who put down a revolt from Gaius Julius Vindex, another Roman governor. Because Virginius refused to act against Nero, it is another military leader that gained military support, Servius Sulpicius Galba, governor of Hispania, or modern day Spain, became the forefront leader. Former supporter and head of the Praetorian Guard, Gaius Nymphidius Sabinus, abandoned Nero. Sabinus then promised to the Praetorian Guard that the material rewards will be gifted if they would support Galba as the next leader. Sabinus will play a major role regarding Nero's wife, Sporus. In 68 AD, after learning Nero was being ousted out of power, he tried getting a boat to go towards the more loyal eastern part of the empire. However, this was not to be. While pretending to commit suicide, Nero cried, "Have I neither friend nor foe?" in reference to anyone who may have helped him die. Later on, returning back to the palace, a friend and or confidant of Nero, Phaon, an imperial freedman, offered his residence a villa so that Nero could hide out and collect his thoughts. Also with him were his other friends, Phaon, Nevoteus, and Sporus. These three friends and partner were the last to be with Nero before he died. While at his friend's villa, Nero asked them to dig a grave so that he may be buried there after being killed or committing suicide. He also learned that the Senate had named him a public enemy. He tried to commit suicide, but could not go through with it. He kept muttering the phrase, Qualis artifex pereo, translating to, what an artist the world is losing. While hearing horses arrive, Nero still couldn't kill or off himself. Anyway, he was whacked by a friend. Nero's last words were, too late, this is fidelity. If you say so. He died on the 9th of June 68 AD, the 6th anniversary of whacking his first wife / stepsister Claudia Octavia. Nero was finally buried at the mausoleum of the Domitii Ahenobarbi, which is now the Villa Borghese, a landscape garden at the Pincian Hill in Rome. At this point, the direct Julio-Claudian line of the Roman emperors was finished, and not on a high note either. As stated, Sporus was with Nero at the end. Unfortunately, this wasn't the end of Sporus' story. At the death of Nero, Sporus was under the protection of the Praetorian prefect, Nymphidius Sabinus. Like Nero, Sabinus treated Sporus as a wife, also calling him Nero's favorite wife named Poppaea. Unfortunately for Sabinus, he vied for the imperial throne and was killed by his own men. Ooh, well. Remember Otho, the spouse of Poppaea before marrying Nero? Yeah, him. Well, Sporus then became involved with him. Otho became the second of four emperors within 1 year after Nero's death. He reigned for 3 months. He was then overthrown by his rival Vitellius. Oh, he too committed suicide after the defeat Battle of Bedriacum. Vitellius then took the spoils of war, including Sporus. He was then going to use Sporus as entertainment. Vitellius was then going to put on a production of the Rape of Proserpina, or the Rape of Persephone, and Persephone was going to be played by Sporus. So imagine, poor Sporus was going to be gang raped. To prevent himself from being a public spectacle, Sporus then decided and basically said, nah, fuck that, and committed suicide to prevent his public humiliation. So while I didn't touch upon a lot of Nero's political or imperial history as far as what he didn't do as an emperor, I was only covering his relationships. It should be noted that he is not well known as a good emperor, but rather someone who is the AKA artiste. If you listen to another podcast called Totalius Rankium, two hosts do go into a deep dive when it comes to Nero's background and his achievements or lack of achievements during his reign. I'm more concerned about his relationships with his mother, Claudia Acti, Claudia Octavia, stepsister wife, Sporus, and Pythagoras. As we traverse the Julio-Claudian line these last few episodes, I can say quite confidently that Nero was the most neurotic of all the emperors. Tiberius didn't want the empire, but he led it well. He was just a terrible person. Caligula was traumatized by Tiberius, but he too was influenced by his uncle and was a horrible leader, cruel as well. Claudius was not right for the position and had no spine, and Nero, with access to everything, still became a cruel and inefficient leader. Not to the common people, of course, he was beloved by them, but rather those who were in power, or at least in powerful positions. Nero was wont to spend his time playing his lyre, being an artiste, and being with his women, or his men. Of course, a lot of people who listen to other history podcasts know that Nero was the leader in Rome when it burned. But apparently, as the legend goes, he was playing his lyre, watching it burn, and then blamed it on the new group of religious dissenters who didn't practice paganism, but monotheism, the new Christians. Nero also deified himself again. He was the artiste. He was the emperor of Rome. He could not be denied. But more importantly, we need to get back to Nero's sex scandals and shenanigans. Was he a notorious lover? Oh yeah, there's no doubt about it. He whacked his stepsister wife. He married his mistress Poppaea. And of course, his two marriages to Sporus and Pythagoras.
Sporus being turned into a woman who, again, looked like Poppaea, whom Nero actually loved. Nero fits the mold for sex scandals and shenanigans. Nero may not have been a mistress, maybe except to Pythagoras, but generally, he was not a mistress, but he certainly was notorious. I just want to say thank you for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Adrian. The music is provided by the Advent Chamber Orchestra, performing Vivaldi's Concerto for Two Violins in A Minor RV522 from museopen.org. You can also visit my website, sexscandalshenanigans.my.canva.site, or contact me via email at sexscandalshenaniganspod@gmail.com. Try not to get into any shenanigans yourself, as I may end up telling your story. Again, thank you for listening. A new episode is soon to come. Bye!